Radio X. Serving the international expat community. Loving the city. Loving you. This is Radio X.
Everyone, welcome on Radio X. This is The Joy of Brussels. And today I'm very happy because I have around me very, very interesting people. And I have three interesting guests. The first one is a very handsome man, a Spanish handsome man. He's on my left side. Hello, Manuel.
Hello, Joy.
How are you?
I'm great, thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Oh, that's great. I'm excited too. And in front of me, I have a very handsome lady, Miss Alison. Hello, Alison. How are you?
Good, thanks.
And her husband or friend or husband, Andrew.
Hi, Joy.
Hello. So you are Canadians, that's right?
Yes, we are from the East Coast.
Perfect. And the amazing thing is that you live in a small, like a small part of Canada, not very well-known part
exactly,
of Canada.
Exactly.
And I've been there.
I know. It's so weird. Nobody goes there.
So we're talking about Nova Scotia and
New Brunswick.
Wait. And that's amazing because I've been there. And actually, it was pretty nice. And you're talking French there, right?
I speak English natively, but we also have a bilingual province. So it's a lot like Belgium.
So it was easy for you when you arrived here. It was not
easy, but yeah, the accent is very, very different where I come from to Belgium. So it took a while to get used to. But
can you say something with the Canadian accent?
Oh God, no! Please don't make me.
Okay, it's too early. I understand. No worries. No, actually, it's 6 o'clock. It's 6 p.m., so you should be able, no?
No. Everybody's still sleeping back there. It's the other way. It's early morning.
Okay, perfect. So, guys, how long have you been in Brussels for, Manuel?
I arrived in 2005, and then I took a one-year break, and then I came back. So it's
a break
about
away from Brussels, I can't bear it anymore?
Yes. So, yeah. And then I came back one year after.
You couldn't bear Brussels anymore?
It was not like that, but I needed to live in another city and to see how things are there. I lived 1 year in Madrid.
Uh-huh. That's an exciting place as well.
And yeah, it was very good. I got a lot of energy from the place. Yeah. And then I came back and I saw the city of Brussels in a different way. So it was very enriching for me.
Okay. Because is Brussels not giving energy, but taking energy?
It takes energy. Brussels, I mean, it's a city where there are a lot of things going on. And yeah, it takes a lot of energy. Madrid has a different energy from Brussels. It's a city where more things happen in the street. There are much more social interactions and social communication. So it's a city that really very exhausting. And also there is a lot of people living in Madrid, you know, so you see a lot of people in the city. In Brussels, there is more space.
Yeah, I agree. I've been in Madrid not a long time ago, and what I noticed, well, I was with a friend that lives there, so she could show us around, and I thought Madrid was really inspiring because of the crisis, etc. People are going back to more underground things, and they're creating a lot of things with what they have, that it's not a political or European help things happening. It's more the people that create things. Do you feel the same in Brussels, or is it more political or more not underground, I mean?
I think, in Madrid, I was there exactly in 2010, so there was a moment with, you know, the peak of the crisis. There was a lot of things happening from people to people. So people collaborating.
And do
people
you find
creating
that?
Businesses, people helping each other, and this was a special thing that was happening in Madrid, and it's still happening. Collaboration.
I agree. Do you find that in Brussels?
I find it. It's maybe not so visible, but I find it. I see that there are a lot of things happening here as well in that
We'll come back to it, but maybe we'll talk about it, the blog community, because you both have a blog about food, and we're going to talk about that today. Alison, what do you think? In the blog community, there's a lot of collaboration?
Yeah, I think it's definitely becoming more collaborative in the past couple of years, especially. There seems to be a lot more organizations of food bloggers or travel bloggers or bloggers by language. So there's kind of French bloggers that get together, expat bloggers get together. So, yeah, I'm seeing a lot more crossover and collaboration in the past couple of years than originally.
Because there's like, for example, food is all over now. You have TV shows, you have radio shows, you have everything. So I guess there's a lot of food blogs as well. How do you do? Because Belgium and Brussels must be a small market. Do you collaborate with each other? Do you know each other? Do you talk to each other? How does it go?
A lot of us know each other. Actually, back in the spring, I got together with a couple of other girls and founded a group called the Brussels Food Bloggers, and
that's a platform, or
they organize events. It's called Brussels Food Friends, and it's basically for food bloggers in Brussels or in Belgium in general to get together and meet each other face to face, because a lot of each other we know each other online, but we haven't necessarily met in person. So it's a good way to get together and network and partner up and do things together.
And they're expats or they're Belgian?
Everything. Okay. Everybody.
A great mix.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good, because in many areas, Belgians and Brussels, Bruxellois don't mix with expats. So it's a great, food is like a universal thing that...
Absolutely. I think Brussels, more than anywhere, is such a passionate food city. You know, everybody loves to eat and everybody loves to talk about food and restaurants and where they're going. And so it's a good way of kind of unifying people over food.
Yeah, totally. We're going to come back to that after. But can you tell us a little bit more, both of you, about your blog? Because actually, it's not really the same type of blog. So, Manuel, can you tell us about yours?
Well, I have a project. I would say more than a blog is kind of a project. And and then I blog about things that that are happening around the project or other projects that inspire me.
Okay.
So the project is called Open Kitchen, and we organize monthly food events in the city, in different houses and lofts in the city. Okay. So people are sharing their houses, and then we bring a cook, and then we bring an artistic performance. And this is happening in lofts and or art spaces, or we try to find special places in the city, and then we organize some kind of gathering, social gathering around food.
Okay.
So the blogging happens in order to inform the Open Kitchen community about how we are doing, who are we meeting, who are we collaborating with, etc. I also like to blog about special people or cooks or people that are passionate about food. I like to see a little bit the underground aspects of food in Brussels. So maybe it's people that they don't have an official business or they don't have a restaurant, but they are kind of cooking. They are kind of cooking, street cooking or cooking in their places. And there is a lot of things happening in that area.
Okay.
And I am interested into that.
And how do you find those special persons or places?
Well, I think since the project is rolling now, a lot of people is just tell me about it.
Okay.
Because they know about it, and so they tell me, look, I know this person who is cooking. For example, last week I went to Saint Gilles, and there was a good couple of Flemish people. They just started a project called Niam, and they cook And then they sell their own food.
Okay.
To people that just go to their places with their Tupperware, and it's delicious food.
You go to the place with your Tupperware and your bag, and they just that's fantastic.
You pay, I think, 5 euros, uh-huh. and then they put Lebanese food on, and it's different ethnics
uh-huh.
each week.
Uh-huh.
And so this is the kind of things that I am interested.
It's great.
These things that are really not mainstream, but they are a little bit undercover uh-huh. or emerging.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, people inform me about it. I don't know how.
And that's called Miam.
I'm gonna Niam.
N.
N-Y-A-M-M.
Okay, that sounds good. Okay, and that sounds like what we were talking about in Madrid. It's people collaborate and do an underground thing. It's great.
Mm.
And do you think that there's many, do you find many activities like that? Like that in Brussels? Apparently, yes.
Yes.
That's great.
I think
because
there are
as a Bruxelloise, I don't know about it.
Mm.
So I have to go through expats to know about it.
Yeah, you have to follow Open Kitchen on Twitter.
Yeah, I will.
And we always inform when we find something that we are excited about. We always tweet about it, or we always put it on Facebook.
I find it very exciting because it's not, as you said, it's not mainstream and it's not something that you're used to. And also it mixes two communities, Bruxellois and Flemish people, actually, and expats that normally don't mix. Because previously with Andrew, we were talking about the bubble, the expat bubble, the persons that are going to Place Lux every Thursday. And is there, for you, the expat community, is that or is it more than that?
Well, I think there's more than that. I mean, there's certainly the groups that do attend the same sort of expat events. But as Manuel is saying, there's a growing number of people who want experiences. They want something different. They want something emerging. They want to do something that hasn't been done before. And so you see a lot of these sort of pop-up kitchens. We've got the food trucks that are starting to emerge now. You know, that's all these sorts of exciting things happening on the food scene in Brussels that we haven't seen in years. And we've been here for 10 years, and it's become really exciting the past couple of years to see how things have evolved.
Really? You've seen a lot of things changing since you arrived?
Absolutely. And I think a lot of that comes from expats who are missing things from home,
mm-hmm.
who can't find, you know, this one dish that they really miss. And so they just decide, okay, well, I can't get it here, so I'm going to make it myself. And then other expats hear about it and are like, oh, you're making that thing that I miss? That's amazing. And there's really this word of mouth, especially in the expat community, but I think there's more and more Belgians who are getting into it as well and want to branch out and try these different things and take advantage of it. So I think in a way it's underground, but it's not so underground. I mean, it's word of mouth and people doing things that they miss from home.
Yeah.
And there's great initiatives like Open Kitchen, like Manuel runs, you know, that discover things. You've also got Book a Local, which was it's an American woman who started that here in Brussels.
Yeah. It's actually they're our partner on. I'm working for a theater for Fact,
mm-hmm.
and they're our partner there. And I think it's great because also it's mixing Bruxellois and expats and different aspects of the food scene.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's great. It's great.
As I said earlier, your food kind of unifies people across ethnic or, you know, language boundaries. It's something, it's a common thing. We all need to eat so we can come together over a meal and experience that together without even having to speak the same language.
Yeah, totally. But last week we were talking about how it's easy now to find every type of food you want in Brussels. Is it true? You have food
pretty,
store?
Pretty much, yeah. In terms of restaurants, there's a couple that I find a little bit lacking, but for the most part, yeah.
What is lacking?
I would say the Indian food scene is sad from the restaurant standpoint, but in the underground side, there's a lot of it because there is
so
a big Indian community.
For the public,
here.
The underground scene is that people that cook at home and will...
Yeah, for sure.
Places. Invite
and share.
Yeah. And share.
It's about sharing. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so how do you find these people? Through media, social media, or...?
Social media, word of mouth. As Andrew said, Book a Local has been a great resource because it makes it a really easy platform for people.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I think, especially in the expat community, word of mouth, you can't beat it.
Yes. Yeah, it's the best way to know about it. Especially because Brussels, I don't know if you have the same opinion, but for me, Brussels is really secretive. Even though I live here forever, every day I discover a new thing. It could be a new park or a new restaurant or a new bar or a new, I don't know, a new building. And you're like, what? Really? It was always there? And it's not like Paris or a very big city where you're like, wow, you really have to dig for something.
Absolutely. It's kind of the layers of the onion sort of thing. You have to really look. But I think that's also what makes it really special, because it's not all up in your face. It's you have to want to get out and find it.
Yeah, totally. And for example, what would be the last culture shock or the last wow you had in Brussels, you, Manuel?
Well, I just discovered a group. It's a platform. It's called the Potential Office Project.
Potential Office Project.
And it's a group of people that they are mostly architects and artists. They're not so much related about food, but they also do some food. And they are getting together every Wednesday.
Yeah.
In a bar in the center, the midpoint. And then they talk about the concept of work, what is work, and how can we build work in a different way, you know, like office structures, or can we create an office from just a group of people who want to work around something? So it's a very interesting a project, I just bumped into them, and they just did a residency in a train station. How cool is that? In an old train station in Brussels called Congrès.
Congrès, yeah.
Yeah. And they just stayed 1 month there, and every day they set up.
They set up
an office there, and then they
like in the hallway.
In the space of the station, of the train station, and they organized conferences and gatherings, and then they invited.
Is it legal to do that?
In Brussels, Brussels, I would say it's a city where, I mean, you can do a lot of things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a city.
As long as you don't bother the others.
Yeah, it's a city. There is a lot of permissivity, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's a city that, you know, it's like a stone that you can build, you can carve, you know.
Uh-huh.
There is a lot of potential in this city. And there are a lot of spaces where you can do things. I remember another project, now that we're talking about that. It's called Ocanto, and it was just people with a TV station, and they were moving around the city and showing the matches of the World Cup in public spaces.
Okay.
Without any kind of authorization or agreement from the authorities, and they were just moving around, they say, Ocanto, spreading it through social networks. And then everybody was there, and there was matches with more than 30, 40, 50 people watching the football on the street.
And what was the purpose of it?
The purpose is just to, raise awareness about the importance to use the public spaces on the city.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And so that's a potential you think Brussels has, but doesn't use it as much as it should be?
There is a lot of, people right now and projects that are really working on that, on the idea of public spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And then Matthew also mentioned the food trucks, and there is a lot of movement around the food trucks.
The food trucks is something that exists in every single city around the world. We're like 10 years later, but we're so excited about it. So it's cool, but at the same time, it has been seen. I would be excited to see something. Like, I remember when the first Starbucks opened here, we're like, oh, yeah, we're so cool, we have Starbucks. Starbucks, who cares about Starbucks? It's terrible. It's the most, the place that you have all around the world. It's like McDonald's or anything. We're like so excited about it. And it's just terrible. You know, we're just having something that the others had 10 years ago, and it's nothing really exciting.
Yeah, but what food trucks bring is passion for food. These are people who are passionate about doing something simple, something that is very
niche.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's what's exciting. It's not that food trucks haven't existed here, there are waffle trucks and ice cream trucks. They've been here for decades.
Yeah.
You know, but to have the new food trucks are bringing passionate entrepreneurs who are passionate about food, and you're able to talk to them and meet them one-to-one.
Yeah, that's true.
It's no longer a chef sitting in the back of the kitchen who you never meet. Or go to Comme Chez Soi and you'll never see the chef because you're not high enough on the social scale.
Yeah.
Right. So I think it brings that connection.
Okay, perfect. We're going to come back to that and talk about food passion. We're just going to take a little break and we come back. Thank you so much. Welcome back on The Joy of Brussels. I'm still with Manuel. Hello, Manuel.
Hi.
Alison.
Hello.
And Andrew.
Hello.
Hello, guys. How are you? You're still fine?
Still great.
Perfect. So we were talking about food passion and also Brussels. And I was wondering, I asked Manuel, what was his last wow in Brussels? What was yours, Andrew and Alison?
So ours is slightly outside of Brussels. It's in the town of Hullart.
Hullart,
yeah. And it's about the greenhouses there that the Belgian grapes are grown in. It's a very
so we have vines in Brussels.
Vines in well, yeah,
kind of Brussels,
kind of
big Brussels,
just outside of Brussels. Yeah. But it's an area that in the past had huge numbers of greenhouses. It used to be 33,000 greenhouses there, so glass houses. It used to be called the Glass Village.
Okay.
And
50
now,
years ago, you meant?
About 50 years ago, yeah. In about the 50s and 60s, that's when they stopped building them, started changing because it became too expensive to maintain these greenhouses.
Okay.
Today, there's only about 20 to 30 of them left in that area. But they produce a beautiful table grape, probably the best grapes that we've had just to eat. They're very large and round, you know, probably about 2 centimeters in diameter.
And wine as well?
They don't produce wine. These are primarily for eating.
Okay.
They have different varieties. They have some white and then some of the purple grapes. Purple are the most common. So it was the biggest discovery for us recently was just that there were grapes being grown in Belgium. I mean, we know there's wine because we do like some of the wine that are produced here in Belgium. But we didn't know there were table grapes grown, let alone that there's this part of Belgium that had 33,000 glass greenhouses. I mean, it used to be covered with all these glass houses.
Yeah. And so it was red or white grapes?
They were both kinds,
both,
but primarily
okay.
the red or the purple grapes are what are grown now.
And so you just go there, it's in Hullart, it's just outside of Brussels, you take the ring and or the train.
Yep.
You just pop up there and say, I want to taste your grapes.
Yeah, you'll find it in the Delhaize actually has a contract with one of the largest producers that's still working right now. Van Camp is the grower. So you in the season, which is unfortunately just passed, you could find them in Delhaize stores, certain Delhaize stores.
But if you go on the spot, can you take them out of the glass?
If you go on the spot, a lot of the farmers will sell them out of their garage or whatever during the season. And so people will come. We were talking to the owner of this grower, and he was saying people come from all over. You know, they drive hours just to come pick up grapes from his particular spot.
Oh, really? Because they're better.
They're so good.
Than,
yeah. The Leopold grapes are some of the best that we've had.
Leopold grapes.
Leopold. Yeah.
Okay, I write that down. So that's part of your passion for food, right? That's what you're talking about on your blog.
Absolutely. We're all about kind of hidden discoveries, and as we were saying earlier, Belgium is really a country that is full of hidden discoveries and Brussels. I mean, you're always finding these little secret things that you didn't know about. So whether it's food or someone who's making something or, you know, just a really unique hidden attraction. Those are the kind of things that we love finding ourselves and then sharing with other people.
So how do you pick, how do you say, words to mouth? Words to mouth, how do you, you've heard about something and you want to meet that person or you want to go to that place? How do you pick what you put on your blog?
It really depends. Sometimes people contact us directly now. And if they're project or what they're doing sounds interesting, we'll go and check it out. Sometimes it is word of mouth from another expat or from a Belgian friend, and they just say, hey, have you heard about this thing? And again, if it sounds interesting, we try to go and see what it's all about. Recently, we had a fellow expat contact us and say, look, I know you like really spicy food, and it's so hard to get here in Belgium, and we just found this Chinese restaurant, and they're doing really authentic things that you won't find anywhere else. And so we went with them to check it out. It's a tiny, tiny little hole-in-the-wall place called Le Nisevru over by Montgomery. And they're really making traditional dishes from their hometown, which is really in the north of China. So it's not the typical dishes that you get that all taste the same. And they're really sweet people. They came here because their son was going to school here. They're not chefs, but they decided, okay, well, let's just try it. And we'll cook what we know. We'll cook our regional dishes. And really, it's the best Chinese food we've had in Brussels.
That's amazing. Good, because Chinese food doesn't have always the best aura.
No, that aura. Was definitely another cuisine that is... It's very represented here in terms of there being tons of Chinese restaurants, but it's all the same five dishes that are very sort of westernized and not, you know, actual authentic Chinese dishes. So,
and you were talking about spicy food that's not easy to find in Brussels. There's no good restaurant for. What do you mean by spicy food? First thing.
I love all spices. I cook with tons of spices, but I also love really hot, like chili spice.
She likes it when her face melts.
Okay. When she's crying.
If it makes me cry, yeah. It's good. Okay. And Northern Europeans are not known for their passion for hot, spicy things. So.
No, I can't bear it. I totally can't bear it. When you see that little piment just beside the dish, I'm like, okay, that's not for me.
So of course, because a lot of people don't eat it here, not a lot of restaurants are going to put a lot of spice in their food. So even cuisines that are typically quite spicy, like Indian, Chinese, some of these
things. They westernize here.
Yeah, they tend to tame it down for a European palate. So I'm always really happy when I can find something that's really fiery.
And is there places you found some, like, for example, that Chinese restaurant that I'm going to put on Facebook when I'll understand the name because I didn't, but I'll put it on Facebook.
Yeah, for sure. There's a few places.
Authentical.
Yeah, they're more authentic. And some places, if you ask and you say, hey, I want you to cook it the way that you would eat it, they
really?
Will do
really
that.
Do that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for
That's
sure.
Funny. Okay, but when you talk about the scene that you couldn't find spicy food, etc., it means that Brussels is, how is it, the level of the food scene in Brussels is? Is it average? Is it good? Is it diversified? Is it unique? I don't know.
I think it's excellent, and as we were saying before, I think it's because we do have all of these different cultures here that come and influence the cuisine. And so I would say even Belgian cuisine itself has really adapted and taken from all of those different cultures that have passed through. It's not rigid like French cuisine can be. Like, this is the way we do it. This is the way we've always done it. You shall not change anything in this recipe here. Yeah. Even Belgian chefs are very interested in adapting and fusion and taking these other cultural references. And I think that makes the food culture so much more interesting.
What do you think, Manuel?
Yeah, I think I agree. I agree with her. There's also a lot of people who are going out for dinner in Brussels. So it's a very lively city. And this helps. There are lots of restaurants. But
when you go to warmer countries, or even in Paris, I saw it was yesterday, it was Wednesday, there were people all over, all restaurants, all bars were full. In Brussels, sometimes you're walking around and there's neighborhoods that are really empty. So I agree with you, but at the same time, I don't see it. I live in Saint-Gilles or close to Ixelles, and sometimes the restaurants are empty. So I don't really see what you mean, because for me it's a really tame and a very quiet city.
I think it depends. I think I mean, for us, one of the signs of a good restaurant is if it's full on a Monday night.
Yeah.
And you certainly can find restaurants
here
in Brussels.
It's not even open on Monday night.
Well, there are some. But, you know, there are so many restaurants here, but... You know, there are a lot that come and go, but there are ones that really, they are full all the time.
Yeah.
And maybe you have to look a little harder to find that, uh-huh. but I agree with Manuel that, yeah, it's a foodie city and people do like to eat out here.
So there's a lot, but are they all, what is the level of all these restaurants? Is it like there's good and bad ones or the average is pretty high?
I think the average is pretty high for restaurants that stick around.
Compared to other cities you have lived in, is it better? Is it different? Is it?
I think it's a very good level. Me personally, I like to go to. I prefer to go to a restaurant where I pay more, like above 50 for a dinner. Mm-hmm. Than to pay 30 because I don't know, I think there are many restaurants they are using a lot of pre-cooked food and I don't know, somehow I don't trust a lot of restaurants anymore, so I prefer to instead going out less for dinner but go maybe 2-3 times per month and go to a restaurant, you know, that I know that is going to be really, really good quality, above 50 euros or 60 euros for a dinner. But that's my personal
that's
feeling.
That's the point of view. Okay.
Yeah.
Alison, do you agree or do you go another way because of your blog or your activity?
Yes and no. There are, of course, some amazing high-end restaurants here. We have fantastic Michelin star restaurants, but I would say in the past couple of years, especially, it's been really interesting to me to see such improvement on the budget side. There seem to be a lot of young people, and particularly encouraging, there's a lot of young women who are starting restaurants that are a little more outside of the box, but are producing, you know, maybe not as much variety of food, but they're doing a few things really, really well.
For example,
Momo, which opened about a year ago.
That's
probably
a Tibetan.
Doing Tibetan dumplings.
Yeah.
Really fresh. Everything is handmade. Very tasty. Knees to Chin, again, doing like fresh and interesting things with spring rolls. What else? There's Samurai Ramen. Again, there's only about four things on their menu.
It sounds good when you have only four or five items on the menu.
Yeah, you know that
it's
they're
reassuring.
Doing it right.
Yeah.
They're making everything by hand. They're passionate about what they're making. So, you know, I think these kind of places are really as interesting to me as the people who are doing these big expensive tasting menus because, you know, I can go to Viamara and for 15 euros I can get amazing sustainable fish and chips, best fish and chips in the city, and I don't have to kind of really budget for that and I can still have a good meal.
Now we're talking about passion for food. Where does it come from for the three of you? Where does it your passion?
I like to eat.
You like to eat. That's a good reason. Yes, indeed.
No, it's about knowing where your food comes from and finding people who are passionate about producing high-quality things. In the past few months, I've been focusing more on videos one-to-one with people who are behind the scenes, so the mm-hmm. chefs or the owners of things, because I want to understand why people
for
do
your
what
blog,
they do,
you
for
mean?
The blog. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, why are people doing what they're doing?
Yeah.
You know, what makes them tick? Why did they come up with this idea? And I think that's an interesting thing is getting to know the people behind the food that's there. And that's my passion. I mean, I love to eat. I love trying different things. But I also want to understand why someone wants to offer me that dish.
Yeah. So what's the story? What is the emotions behind it?
Yeah, what's the story? What's the emotion? What's the you know, what's the reasoning? You know, why this particular dish? Is it something that they grew up with? Is it something that they're just passionate about in the first place, that they wanted to produce something because it was missing in the market? You know, there's a lot of that sort of people who, as Alison said earlier, identifying that this dish doesn't exist in this market because, you know, and it's something they want to have. So they start with doing something that produces that.
And you, Manuel? Where does the passion come?
Well, I like to eat as well. It's all the social part of it that I'm interested. I'm interested in the social part, so how creating food experiences enables better and more fluid social interactions. So that's the social and cultural part of food. Then I am interested, but I don't have time really to go into the all that is behind the food that we eat, the science behind the agriculture, all the production chains. There is a lot of policy around food also today. I am very interested into that, but I have to admit I don't have the time to really get into it. But this is really something that is going on right now. It's a lot of there's a big revolution around that.
Yeah,
what's behind the food
too.
We eat?
Yeah.
The people are questioning a lot these things nowadays. So this, I find it very interesting also.
I saw a great documentary. It went out 2 years ago or something, about it's a French lady that made it. And it was really interesting because it was about how the European rules completely changed the way we make food and the waste of food. And for example, knowing that in the nature there's like 200 or 300 different types of apples, and that we only have 3 or something, and you're not even allowed to grow the others because of European rules. That was really shocking for me.
Yeah.
And I totally agree that it seems to have a real revolution, especially in young people, wanting to bring a new approach to food.
To know more. People want to know more what's behind. They want to be informed.
Yeah. Do you have the same feeling that we're going back in a certain way, in going back like in the process of producing things, and we're looking at how we used to do things 50 years ago or 100 years ago? Maybe it's better than what we're doing now.
I think there is awareness of environmental issues and human rights issues around food, etc. That people are certain people, elites, I would say, are starting to really think about and to question that. And it's actually a luxury, I think, because I think since governments are failing to really protect the environment, to protect some minimum standards, the burden is left to certain people that are starting projects, projects that are more aware, and projects that are producing things in a more respectful way. So the burden is on the consumer. So and there is a certain consumers that are willing to pay more for a product that is produced in an ethical way. So yeah, I think there is a demand from a sector of consumers that are asking for more quality standards.
And how could we bring more people to think that way? Because I think it's that we have to go that way. That we have no other issue. I mean,
well, that's why I do blogging. I do projects. I like to highlight people and projects that are doing the right things.
Do you think you're adding your stone
I'm
to
putting them? My little grain of sand. I mean, just to give some visibility to certain projects that I think they deserve to be visible.
Yeah, but do you cook yourself or do you produce things or?
Cook myself, but just for my own,
pleasure.
Some friends or in my home, and also right now I'm the new project that I'm starting is. It's going to be around wine, and we're going to curate wine and put it a label of wines that are biodynamic, wines that respect the environment, etc. And yeah, I think it's, for me, it's an experiment. It's a way of learning.
Yeah.
And
do you produce the wine here in Belgium?
The wine is produced. The wine is produced in different regions of Europe. We are going to select it. I mean, with a wine specialist. And, yeah, we are just going to bridge the gap between these producers and the city.
Yeah. Mm? Yeah.
So we are going to select these wines. We are going to tell stories around these wines, blog about these wines.
Yeah.
That's
the social aspect of the production.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's important. That's what you think is important.
Is a luxury. I think if you know, we have some, like, somebody like Fred, who is permanently going to talk to the wine producer, has a personal relations with them, they see how they do it, etc. And then we bring these products to the city with people that are very busy, they don't have time to really go and connect and see these products and the origin. So yeah, we're going to be, the project is called Hidden District, and we are also going to blog about hidden aspects and hidden stories in the city.
You mean Brussels?
In Brussels, yes.
Perfect. Sounds good. When is it going to be out?
Hopefully, well, it's almost done. We're going to launch mid-December.
Okay. So a good present for Christmas.
Yes.
Good. Perfect. We're going to come back in a few minutes with the Joy of Brussels. See you later. So we're back on the Joy of Brussels. I'm still with Manuel, Alison and Andrew. Hello.
Hello.
So we were talking about this kind of revolution and seeing food in another way that we used to see it as an industrial, or not knowing the person behind your plate. That makes sense. That's what you're doing on your blog, Alison and Andrew. You're wondering what's going on, how this plate was made this way, and how the food is created. Tell us about it.
Yeah, on Cheese Web, we really want to tell stories.
Cheese and Web.
Cheese Web.
Cheese Web is the name of your blog.
Yes, okay. Yes. So we really want to tell stories about people that are doing interesting things, finding out why they're doing what they're doing, why we should care that they're doing it in that way. We also look for really kind of unknown secrets, going back to those kind of hidden layers of Brussels, and just looking to tell the stories, the background.
So you're really interested into the people, and then to the food because you like to eat, but mainly as more of a journalist aspect. Like, why do you do that? What is your passion about food? Why?
Exactly. People and stories are really important to us. My background is in journalism, so I always have that kind of questioning nature in my mind anyway. So we just like to tell interesting stories and introduce our audience to people who are doing interesting things.
So you're trying to catch the attention of the public by telling a story.
Yes.
And meeting. It's a man-to-man relationship with the producer or the chef. Or
we really like to get one-on-one, whether that's Andrew doing a video interview or it's me writing an article about, you know, how this person got started and what they're doing. But,
I think it's a whole new experience if you go to a place and you actually know how what you're eating has been made and what's the story behind, if it's a familial running thing or...
Absolutely. I think it makes it a lot more meaningful, and it makes your experience there more mindful, because you go away with these new ideas and questions about, well, you know, if this person is making all of this from scratch, then who isn't doing that? And should I be doing that? And how is this impacting my life and the lives of people around me? So it's all of this interconnectedness that it makes you think about.
And does it take time or energy to do that? Like, as a Lambda person, if I go to a restaurant, I have to read your blog and I go ask the person, I read that about you. Is it easy to talk to these people? Like,
I think anyone who's passionate about what they're doing is also passionate about educating other people about what they're doing and why they're doing it. You know, if you talk to a chef and he's not really interested in talking to you about his food, chances are he's not a particularly passionate chef.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just doing it because that's what he does. But the people that we like to talk to, you know, they really want to talk to people. They want people to understand why it's important, what they're doing, and they're passionate.
Yeah, that's the most important. It's the passion behind.
Absolutely.
So you've been lately focusing on Brussels mainly, and you're going to travel after, right?
Yeah, our base has been in Belgium now for 10 years, and we'll still be talking a lot about Belgium because we still have so many more stories to share. But we're actually, this spring, hitting the road. We're getting rid of all of our stuff and packing up our two cats and putting them in a motorhome. We haven't told them about that yet.
Yeah.
And
go easy on them.
Yeah. And we're going to travel around Europe for a year. And we want to really slow travel and, again, take the time to look for these interesting stories, interesting people, good food. And that's our mission.
So the purpose is to meet great people through food. That's the purpose of the travel.
Yeah,
we
really want to slow travel, I said. That's kind of our mission. I think a lot of people, you know, you have a weekend and you zip off to a city and you kind of rush around doing all of the touristy things and then you rush back home. But we really want to take our time and find the stories in between each major city, and whether that's food or whether that's an interesting destination, that's really what we're looking for.
That's great. Manuel, do you want to say something?
Yes, I just wanted to tell them that please make sure that you inform your cats before
they
hear it on Radio X. Because
yeah, if they listen to Radio X before you've
good
told
point,
them,
good point.
That's terrible. So we're going to... Unfortunately, it's the end of the show very soon. And we haven't talked about your passion. Yeah, we talked about your passion about food, but you didn't tell us what was your favorite food. What was the dish that you couldn't go without? The dish from home, or what your mother used to do, or your grandmother, or what was your favorite? What is the thing you dream about?
For me, I like fish.
Fish, every time.
Yes, because I'm from Galicia, which is a region when, you know, where we are fishermen, and we really enjoy fish. So.
I love
all time. Normally, I like it fresh and very good. So, with just a little bit of plancha and olive oil, that's enough. And maybe some veggies around, without any additional sauces. Or I like it just natural like this.
So you need a good product.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
The most important.
This is essential in fish, you know, to be really, really fresh and very, very good.
Were you able to find that in Brussels?
Yes.
Where?
Yes. Well, I'm going to recommend a new restaurant which started in January. It's called Beaucoup Fish,
uh-huh.
And they are focused on fish, as the name says, and you can order fish there.
And
the
where
restaurant.
Is it?
It's in Saint-Catherine.
In Saint-Catherine, that's
yes.
The main fish restaurant. Place.
Yes, very close to Saint-Catherine.
Great. What about you, Alison and Andrew?
There's so many, but I guess
you have to choose one.
If I had to pick one, I'm really passionate about Indian food. I love making it from scratch. I love eating it. So yeah, curries, anything Indian, I'm into.
Okay, and did you find a good place in Brussels for that?
My house.
Your house. Your house is the best place.
It definitely is the best place, yes.
You live there, so you know.
Yeah, I gotta say that.
He has to taste all of my experiments.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm gonna go a little different. I'm just gonna say that I love Belgian. I love Belgian beer.
Ah, Belgian beer. Yeah,
that's
we haven't talked about that.
I write a lot about that, but that's one of the things that I really like about being here is the different styles of beer that you have access to here, and it's, you know, it's changing as well because of the changes in the worldwide, you know, craft beer industry, especially in the U.S. So it's evolving as well, which is exciting. So I haven't really met too many beer I don't like.
But, you like everything. That's
you know,
good.
If you want my favorite, it's from a brewer called the Dr. Van de Coronar.
Okay, I don't know about it. You know more than me.
And it's a small producer, and they exist in one of the Belgian enclaves that's actually in the Netherlands.
Okay.
So it's surrounded by the Netherlands, but it's a Belgian town.
Oh, that's funny.
So it's they produce delicious beer.
Okay. And do you know about all the microbrewery that start to exist now? All young people that start...
It's impossible to know about all of them. I know
no, not all of them.
There's a lot. There's a number that are starting up in Belgium, but there's also so many starting up all over the world right now. It's actually, if you're into beer, it's an exciting time to be
a beer drinker. Yeah, it's very exciting because we were talking about the revolution going on, and I think it's totally part of it. People are making their own beer, and
for sure, yeah. And then you also have the crossovers. You've got really passionate brewers. There's actually one of the top brewers, female brewers, is here in Belgium as well.
Female brewers,
yeah. And then you've got crossovers between the U.S. and Belgium, you know, doing different styles of beer. So it's really exciting. And right now, since we're recording in November, we've got the Christmas beer starting to come out, which is typically more spicy, you know, a little bit different. Style of beer, so that's
so we have to taste it.
Yep, you have to taste the Christmas beer.
That's great. Thank you so much to all of you. It was very interesting to know all about that.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, with pleasure. So, what can I wish you? A good Christmas, a good dinner for Christmas. What can I wish you?
I wish that we can come back again next year.
Sounds good. And I wish that your cats will know before you leave.
Thank you.
That's perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Radio X.